Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? The show starts in 10, 9, 8, 7, 6. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go.
Hey. Hello, welcome to Cluster Shock Entertainment Reports. I am Beth, a.k.a. Be True. Thank you all for joining a late night edition of Cluster Shock Entertainment Reports. You definitely can call in. I will start clicking the calls that, if any, are chimed in about 15 minutes. But it's a new week. It's the end in the USA. It's the end of Monday night. And just thank you for tuning in. I'll remember to email me at Culture Shock Entertainment, KULTRESHOKENT _ Beth@yahoo.com. And just thank you for your longtime support, those of you that are longtime listeners, and to the new listeners also of Culture Shock Entertainment Reports. And this is money motivating. This is money making Monday. Really, it's Mississippi Monday, because all eyes have been on the state of Mississippi from around the world, and the state flag has been decommissioned. So the state of Mississippi will be getting a new flag, a flag that is inclusive and current and up to date. All respect to, I'm a history buff. So all due respect to history, but now the flag that is still flying will be history, something that we study. Very important to not only right now in the civil rights movement, but also the civil war time back in the 1800s. So now it will be a part of history, not a part of modern day world. So this is major news all around from those that wanted to stay up, from those that wanted to come down. So it was shocked me, honestly, earlier this year when the bill died on the floor regarding the people having the right to vote for a new flag. And sadly, it had to take the death of George Flynn, peaceful protests, looting and rioting, not to mention other just crazy things to happen, murders and just injustices to humanity to happen before immediate action had to be taken. The decision was not voted on by the people, but it was voted on by the way it was, like our Lieutenant Governor, Deborah Hoseman mentioned, and other lawmakers mentioned, it was decided the way it was decided back in the 1800s. By lawmakers, by the legislature, just like it was decided to go up, legislature decided to bring it down. And that is something that the state of Mississippi, a Republican governor, Tate Reeves, opposed. He and many others felt that it should be a decision of we the people. So I'm not in the in the studio. That's the reason why I take calls in about 15 minutes, because I'm looking at news and I'm looking at history regarding the flag, the flag of Mississippi. And so just to read from Wikipedia, and Mississippi, I was born and raised here in the state of Mississippi, and again, I'm a history buff. And so, and then I talked to many of my friends here in Mississippi and in Texas and Oklahoma and around the world. Regarding, many of my friends are history buffs too, And many of my friends have shared with me also their thoughts regarding the Confederate flag and regarding the history of the Confederate flag. And really, no joke, I'm not kidding you. I might get calls or get bashed or stalked about what I'm about to say. I have, many of you know, I have many friends that are non-black. And I do have friends that, you know, have items that have Confederate emblems on them. And those same friends would give me like the shirt off their back, some of those friends. No joke. I'm not joking. And someone made a comment, and I, out of all my 51 years, I have never seen a hateful comment like the comment I seen on Facebook the other day when it was announced that the flag will be coming down. Because I just went into tears. Yes, I, you know, it can just go on and on. And I'm going to get calls, and I can't wait so we can talk about this. But this, as we're watching what's going on the floor of the Capitol, a Caucasian lady happened to make comments about, well, I hope y'all black folk are happy now that the flag is coming down, but it's not going to change hatred. And I mentioned to her, and many others just went like flat off calling her just unbelievable. She would make a racist comment like that. Now, all my 51 years, no joke, I had never heard a comment with hate like that. And my feedback to her was that she needed to do her research, because it was on Ross Adams of Channel 16, who he and I befriended one another, like during the inauguration of Haley Barbour, his second inauguration, when he worked for Channel 12, our CBS affiliate. He interviewed me, and we have been supporters of each other since then. And he does amazing stories regarding the flag. And when I was in Texas, I kept up with his stories regarding the state flag. And one story that always interests me was his stories and interviews of interviewing African Americans, black folk that didn't want the flag to come down. That don't. Because there were, you guys forget, that black soldiers have always fought in American wars. And also in the civil there are blacks that were Confederate soldiers. So, you know, I'm gonna pull up some of those clips from interviews that Ross Adams had with the blacks that don't want to see it, they didn't want to see it. But it's time for change. Mississippi, so many people. Mississippi has the most millionaires per capita and have held that title for years. I'm going to Google and research and make sure that we still have that title. People look at Mississippi, oh, it's a poor old state full of poverty and all of that. And like I was talking to one of my friends who is a banker. She's a manager at a bank. And she said that people look at Mississippi as being the poorest, and because of, you know, the average, the median income and all of that. But, and I can't believe I thought I was going to be speechless. And I must admit, I have been drinking a little bit, eating a little bit. I had an awesome time at my friend's Carla Gray's party last night. My apologies for not broadcasting last night. I was at a birthday party, you know. Hey, I got out the house and had some fun with one of my childhood friends and her husband and her friends and coworkers and so on, and had a blast of a good time. And I still had some drink and some good food left over, and I've been, you know, I enjoy before coming on air tonight. So I'm kind of, I'm lit a little bit, but I'm intellectual, me too. So, and I'm just putting things out there, because usually people have been calling in, so I'm so glad to get back to the interactive shows. But let me reel back to what I was saying. But I wanted to make that quick shout out to my friend who celebrated her 50 caller, and her family and her husband and friends and all of those that were in attendance at her. And we practiced social distancing. Most of us had on masks, and it was a very nice, intimate party inside and outside. And I'm going to post videos and pictures also. I need to send her pictures and videos of the party. So it was awesome. My nephew is here. Do you guys remember my nephew? He was here when I first started the show. So he's in town. So it's summertime and all that. So, and a shout out to my guy. I know Terry's listening. He might call in. He had been waiting for the show to get back to being interactive, but we talk right before the show, and I'm like, call into the show. Because we have, you know, he have a lot to say, and he's ready to be a part of the show also. And thank you to those of you that support all of my social media, and also Terry and I social media, the James Franco Project Group, and also the Save Dallas pages, and Culture Shock Entertainment Reports, and Culture Shock Entertainment pages. Thank you for your love and your support. But back to what we were talking about, because today is Motivating Monday, Money Making Monday, and definitely in Mississippi Monday, because we are breaking ground and making history, and now opening the doors to closing the gap, to the wealth gap, spreading the wealth. More businesses will be coming in. We will be able to have better commerce, and filmmakers, more films will come in. I mean, it's just, the song that I hear, and I was telling my friends at the party last night, the song that keeps ringing in my head is the theme song from the Jeffersons. We're moving on up, you know, because to get a new flag, and on the flag it was saying, God we trust, and all flags need to say that, right? In God we trust. And the new flag cannot have anything dealing with the Confederacy on it also. But I'm going to go over details. And I do know the deadline to submit a new design is September 14th. I told my friend Dara Anderson, many of you know of his work, and especially those of you that if you're not in Mississippi, if you're a social media friend of mine, especially Facebook, I reshare a lot of his, and he posts on my wall too, his awesome artwork. I definitely told him he definitely should submit. I might even try to submit something, but really, Daryl should. He's a sought after artist. Also, I know Bill Wilson probably would submit something. Wyatt Waters might. But then you never know, a cool art student might submit something. We never know who will submit something and who flag might be chosen. But definitely have to say, in God we trust, and no type of Confederacy emblems. It must be a flag that signifies unity, not division. And, you know, all due respect to history, nobody's not saying, oh, we're just going to erase. Because what's important, we need to include, because that's what's been one of the problems, too. There's been an exclusion of Native Americans and Black African Americans, Americans of color in our history books, the roles that they play. So we should have been people of color, African Americans, Native Americans, and other races of color should be getting their, should have been included in our history books and history studies from the beginning anyway. We wouldn't have bumped into a lot of the situations that we are dealing with when it comes to race relations. So, Wikipedia states regarding the flag of Mississippi that the flag of Mississippi is the state flag of the U.S. state of Mississippi. It consists of three equal horizontal tribands of blue, white, and red, with a red square in the canton referred to specifically as the Union, bearing the Confederate battle flag. And one Republican lawmaker, before I continue, one Republican lawmaker mentioned, because remember, Republican Party was the party of Abraham Lincoln that freed the slaves. The Confederate flag emblem represents the opposers, you know. So people that think very negative of Republicans, I mean, really, it was a big day for Republicans too, of all colors, because the Republican Party was the party of Abraham Lincoln that freed slaves. And so it is important to people of all races, different backgrounds, and political affiliations for us to get a new flag that unifies everybody. And people that want to talk about hate, that's hate. Like the white woman, the Caucasian woman that makes an ugly comment about, oh, well, hope y'all black folks are happy, but it's still going to be hatred. I have relatives and friends, and there are a lot of black people that have the same kind of hatred that she's talking about, and y'all know that. So, yeah, hatred still exists, but it's about having a flag that represents love and unity and prosperity, making money, closing the wealth gap, spreading the wealth. As long as we have the flag up, that is hurting the state, you know. And so they're not saying you cannot have your flag, black or white or whatever color you are, but it just won't be the flag that's representing the state of Mississippi anymore. Because I'm a history buff, and you all know that. And so everybody understands that. Whatever side you're on, whatever race, socioeconomic background, political affiliation. But it's time for unity. And Mississippi is the state to create. Mississippi is one of the states. Well, all states create great people. But Mississippi is a secret. Greats like Oprah Winfrey, Morgan Freeman, Bob Pittman, who created MTV, Bob Johnson, who created BET. I mean, Leontine Price, great opera singer, B.B. King. The list goes on. The guy that created the Muppets, whom I love. I mean, there are so many greats that were born and raised right here in Mississippi, you know. And I have, and some, Mississippi is a beautiful state. It's a great state to come and vacate, a great state to relocate to. Because I have met people also that told me they had never been to Mississippi, but they come here to relocate and open businesses here. So now, without the stigma of having a divisive flag, more people will come and relocate. More people will at least come do business. More people come and travel and tour the awesome museums and study history in real life. See what, because even those of us that are here in the state, we need to get out and go to museums and go to different towns. Not just the capital, but visit smaller towns to see our history and just enjoy, and you know, in the truth and the funness of the state of Mississippi, just like all other states. But I really would love to just get me a mobile home or a RV and travel all states, you know, and just visit all the capitals. That's like a wish I've always had since a little girl. Get in an RV and just hit all the states and visit the capitals. You know, it's fun. But so Mississippi is a state now that I believe the tourism will increase too. People love coming here anyway, but definitely people will come here for tourism, for business, and for school. And Mississippi is not just a secret in agriculture, but it's a groundbreaker in the medical industry and also. When it comes to new technology, that was something that amazed our late mom and I regarding the new technology aspect of the state of Mississippi. But let me continue reading from Wikipedia about the state of Mississippi. The flag of Mississippi is the state flag. And Terry's texting me when he can call the show. The flag of Mississippi is the state flag of the U.S. state of Mississippi. It consists of three equal horizontal tribands of blue, white, and red, with a red square in the canton, referred to specifically as the Union, bearing the Confederate battle flag. Adopted in February 1894, 125 years ago, it was designed by Edward N. Scudder. And then it says the proportion is 3.3 in state flag. Now it's been decommissioned. So there are various questions. Does Mississippi need a new state flag? What does the Mississippi state flag mean? What does star on a U.S. flag represent Mississippi? And how many stars are there on the Mississippi state flag? So what does the Mississippi state flag mean? The answer from reference states101.com/flags Mississippi states that the red color on the wrist of the state flag represents the valor and courage, while blue signifies allegiance, justice, and determination. White shows harmony and morality in the midst of disorder and war. The combination of blue, red, and white on the Mississippi flag symbolizes both the nation, its freedom. So, what does star on the U.S. flag represent Mississippi? Mississippi flag meaning the red, white, and blue are the national colors of the U.S. The flag shows influences from flags of the former Confederate States of America. The Confederate States of America, commonly referred to as the Confederacy, was an unrecognized country in North America that existed from 1861 to 1865. The Confederacy only lasted 4 years, 61 to 65. The Confederacy was originally formed by 7 secessionist slaveholding states: South Carolina, Mississippi, I'm trying to open it up so I can read it, because it's not opening up the way it should, and I want to read everything. Mississippi, oh, okay. There's a little delay because I couldn't read everything. South Carolina, Mississippi, Florida, Alabama, Georgia, Louisiana, and Texas. The Confederacy was originally formed by a secession of 7 slaveholding states, all in the Deep South. So now that we're getting all this business taken care of, time for us to talk reparations, right? That's a whole other subject too, right? But it's connected. You know, 40 acres and a mule, like the name of Spike Lee's company. It's time to talk reparations, definitely, for Native Americans and for blacks. You know, it's time to talk dollars now. And I, you know what, for some reason, I mentioned this on my Facebook page. I feel we will see that day. Some people think it will never happen. After dealing with this pandemic and dealing with a bipartisan decision regarding this pandemic, and reparations have been discussed a lot throughout the media and everyday people, I honestly believe it can happen. And you hear President Trump and you hear presidential candidate Joe Biden both talking about reparations should be paid. And I do believe that we will see that day. I do. We just have to believe. And it's not about a handout, but back as I read on Saturday night, talking about June 10th, slave owners were paid reparations as soon as the slaves were free. Okay, let me continue this. Existing from 1861 to 1865, the Confederacy was originally formed by a secession of 7 slaveholding states: South Carolina, Mississippi, Florida, Alabama, Georgia, Louisiana, and Texas. In the lower South region of the United States, whose economy was heavily dependent upon agriculture, particularly cotton and a plantation system that relied upon the labor of African American slaves. Convinced that white supremacy and the institution of slavery were threatened by the November 1860 election of Republican candidate Abraham Lincoln to the U.S. presidency, President D.C. on a platform which opposed the expansion of slavery into the Western territories. The Confederacy declared its secession in rebellion against the United States, with the lower states becoming known as the Union. During the ensuing American Civil War, In a speech known today as the Cornerstone Address, Confederate Vice President Alexander H. Stephens described the ideology as being centrally based upon the great truth that the Negro, quote unquote, is not equal to the white man, that slavery subordination to the superior race is its natural and normal condition. Excuse me, I need to drink some water. Before Lincoln took office in March, a new Confederate government was established in February 1861, which considered illegal by the United States federal government. Confederate states volunteered militia units, and the new government hastened to form its own Confederate States Army, practically overnight. As the war began in April, four slave states of the Upper South, Virginia, Arkansas, Tennessee, and North Carolina, all seceded and joined the Confederacy. The Confederacy later accepted Missouri and Kentucky as members. Although neither officially declared secession, nor were they ever largely controlled by Confederate forces, despite the efforts of Confederate shadow governments, which were eventually expelled. The government of the United States, the Union, rejected the claims of secession as illegitimate. I've been drinking a little bit. But the Civil War began on April 12, 1861, when the Confederates attacked Fort Sumter, a Union fort in the harbor of Charleston, South Carolina. No foreign government ever officially recognized the Confederacy as an independent country. Although Great Britain and France granted it belligerent status, which allowed Confederate agents to contract with private concerns for arms and other supplies in early 1865 after 4 years of heavy fighting and 620,000 to 850,000 military deaths at Confederate forces, surrendered most symbolically in Confederate General Robert E. Lee surrendered to Ulysses S. Grant at Appomattox, did I say that right, on April 9, 1865. The war lacked a formal end, and all Confederate forces had been forced into surrender or deliberately disbanded by the end of 1865. When Confederate President Jefferson Davison lamented that Confederacy had disappeared, President Lincoln was assassinated by Confederate sympathizer John Wilkes Booth on April 15, 1865. After the war, Confederate states were readmitted to the Union during the Reconstruction era. After each ratified the 13th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, which outlawed slavery, laws called ideology, an allies' view of Confederacy as valiantly fighting for just cause emerged in the decades after the war among former Confederate generals and politicians, as well as organizations such as the Sons of Confederate Veterans and the United Daughters of the Confederacy. Particularly intense periods of lost cause activity came around the time of World War I, as the last Confederate veterans began to die and a push was made to preserve their memory. And then during the civil rights movement of the 1950s and 60s, in reaction to growing public support for racial equality. Through activities such as building prominent Confederate monuments and writing school history textbooks to paint the Confederacy in a favorable light, lost cause advocates such as the United Daughters of the Confederacy sought to ensure future generations of Southern whites would continue to support white supremacist policies such as the Jim Crow laws. The modern display of Confederate flags primarily started in the late 1940s with Senator Strom Thurmond's Dixiecrats in opposition to the civil rights movement, and has continued to present day. Okay, the span of control. On February 22, 1862, the Confederate Constitution of seven state signatories, Mississippi, South Carolina, Florida, Alabama, Georgia, Louisiana, and Texas, replaced the provisional constitution of February 8, 1861, with one state in its preamble a desire for permanent federal government. Four additional slaveholding states, Virginia, Arkansas, Tennessee, and North Carolina, declared their secession and joined the Confederacy following a call by U.S. President Abraham Lincoln for troops from each state to recapture Sumter and other seized federal properties in the South. Missouri and Kentucky were represented by partisan factions, adopting the forms of state governments without control of substantial territory or population in either case. The antebellum state governments in both maintained their representation in the Union. Also fighting for the Confederacy with two of the five civilized tribes, the Choctaw and the Chickasaw, in Indian Territory and a new but uncontrolled Confederate territory of Arizona. Efforts by certain factions in Maryland to secede was halted by federal imposition of martial law, Delaware. Though of divided loyalty, did not attempt it. A unionist government was formed in opposition to the secession state government in Richmond and administered the western parts of Virginia that had been occupied by federal troops. The restored government of Virginia later recognized the new state of West Virginia, which was admitted to the Union during the war on June 20, 1863, and relocated to Alexandria for the rest of the war. Confederate control over its claimed territory and population in congressional districts steadily shrank from three quarters to a third during the course of the American Civil War due to the Union's successful overland campaigns, its control of inland waterways into the South, and its blockade of the southern coast. With the Emancipation Proclamation on January 1, 1863, the Union made abolition of slavery a war goal. In addition to reunion, as Union forces moved southward, large numbers of plantation slaves were freed. Many joined the Union lines, enrolling as soldiers, teamsters, and laborers. The most notable advance was Sherman's march to the sea in late 1864. Much of the Confederacy infrastructure was destroyed, including telegraphs, railroads, and bridges. Plantations in the path of Sherman's forces were severely damaged. Internal movement with the Confederacy became increasingly difficult, weakening its economy and limiting army mobility. These losses created an insurmountable disadvantage in men, material and finance, public support for the Confederate President Jefferson Davis administration eroded over time due to repeated military reverses, economic hardships, and allegations of autocratic government. After 4 years of campaigning, Richmond was captured by the Union forces in April 1865. A few days later, General Robert E. Lee surrendered to Union General Ulysses S. Grant, effectively signaling the collapse of the Confederacy. President Davis was captured on May 10, 1865, and jailed for treason, but no trial was ever held. Okay, now to the more history. The Confederacy was established in the Montgomery Convention in February 1861 by the seven states. South Carolina, Mississippi, Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Louisiana, and Texas in March before Lincoln's inauguration. It expanded in May to July 1861 with Virginia, Arkansas, Tennessee, and North Carolina, and disintegrated in April-May 1865. It was formed by delegations from seven slave states of the Lower South that had proclaimed a secession from the Union. After the fighting began in April, four additional slave states seceded and were admitted. Later, two slave states, Missouri and Kentucky, and two territories were given seats in the Confederate Congress. So I'm looking at a map of the evolution of the Confederate states, December 20, 1860 to July 15, 1870. Southern nationalism was swelling, and pride supported the new founding. Confederate nationalism prepared men to fight for the cause. The duration of its existence, the Confederacy underwent trial by war. The Southern cause transcended the ideology of states' rights, tariff policy, and internal improvement. This cause supported or derived from cultural and financial dependence on the South's slavery-based economy. The convergence of race and slavery, politics, and economics raised almost all South-related policy questions to the status of moral questions of a way of life. Commingling love of things Southern and hatred of things Northern Not only did national political parties split, but national churches and interstate families as well divided along sectional lines as the war approached. According to historian John M. Kosky, the statesmen who led the secession movement were unashamed to explicitly cite the defense of slavery as their prime motive. Acknowledging the centrality of slavery to the Confederacy is essential for understanding the Confederate. Whoa, that's deep. Dang. Southern Democrats had chosen John Breckinridge as their candidate during the U.S. presidential election in 1860, but in no southern state other than South Carolina, where the legislature chose the election, electors were supported for him unanimous. All other states recorded at least some popular votes for one or more of the other three candidates, Abraham Lincoln, Stephen A. Douglas, and John Bell. Support for these candidates collectively ranged from significant to an outright majority, with extremes running from 25% in Texas to 81% in Missouri. There were minority views everywhere, especially in the upland plateau areas of the South, and particularly concentrated in western Virginia and eastern Tennessee. Following South Carolina's unanimous 1860 secession vote, no other southern states considered the question until 1861. And when they did, none had a unanimous vote. All had residents who cast significant numbers of unionist votes in either legislature, conventions, popular referendums, or in all three. Voting to remain in the Union did not necessarily mean that individuals were sympathizers with the North. Once hostilities began, many of these who voted to remain in the Union, particularly in the Deep South, accepted the majority decision and supported Confederacy. Many writers have evaluated the Civil War as an American tragedy, a brother's war, pitting brother against brother, father against son, kin against kin of every degree. A revolution in disunion. According to historian Avery O. Craven in 1950, the Confederate States of America nation as a state power was created by secessionists and southern slave states who believed that the federal government was making them second-class citizens and refused to honor their belief that slavery was beneficial to the Negro. Oh. They judged the agents of change to be abolitionists. I know, an anti-slave element. I told Tira, I was like, I hope I speak right. in the Republican Party, whom they believed used repeated insult and injury to subject them to intolerable humiliation and degradation. The Black Republicans, as the Southerners called them and their allies, soon dominated the U.S. House, Senate, and presidency. On the U.S. Supreme Court, Chief Justice Roger B. Taney, a presumed supporter of slavery, was 83 years old and ailing. During the campaign for president in 1860, some secessionists threatened his union should be Lincoln, who opposed the expansion of slavery into the territory, be elected, including William L. Yancey toured the North calling for secession, as Stephen A. Douglas toured the South calling for union in the event of Lincoln's election. To the secessionists, the Republican intent was clear: to contain slavery with its present bounds and eventually to eliminate it entirely. A Lincoln victory presented them with a momentous choice, as they saw it, even before the inauguration: the Union without slavery, or slavery without the Union. Whoa. Causes of secession. The immediate catalyst for secession was the victory of the Republican Party in the election of Abraham Lincoln as president in the 1860 elections. American Civil War historian James M. McPherson suggested for Southerners the most ominous feature of the Republican victories in the congressional and presidential elections of 1860 was the magnitude of those victories. Republicans captured over 60% of the Northern vote and 3/4 of its congressional delegation. The Southern press said that such Republicans represented the anti-slavery portion of the North, a party found on a single sentiment of hatred of African slavery. And now the controlling power in the national affairs, the Black Republican Party, overwhelmed conservative Yankees. So the Republican Party was called the Black Republican Party because the Republican Party was against the expansion of slavery and wanted it to be eliminated. The Black Republican Party overwhelmed conservative Yankees. The New Orleans Delta State of the Republicans. It is, in fact, essentially a revolutionary party to overthrow slavery. By 1860, sectional disagreements between the North and the South concerned primarily the maintenance or expansion of slavery in the United States. Historian Drew Gilpin Faulk observed that leaders of the secession movement across the South cited slavery as the most compelling reason for Southern independence. Although most white Southerners did not own slaves, the majority supported the institution of slavery and benefited indirectly from the slave society. For struggling yeomen and subsistence farmers, the slave society provided a large class of people ranked lower in the social scale than themselves. Secondary differences related to the issues of free speech, runaway slaves, expansion into Cuba, and states' rights. Historian Emory Thomas assessed the Confederacy's self-image by studying correspondence sent by the Confederate government in 1861 and 62 to foreign governments. He found that Confederate diplomacy projected multiple contradictory self-images. The Southern nation was by turns a guileless people attacked by a voracious neighbor, an established nation in some temporary difficulty, a collection of bucolic aristocrats making a romantic stand against the banalities of industrial democracy, a cabal of commercial farmers seeking to make a pond of king cotton, an apotheosis of 19th century nationalism and revolutionary liberalism of the ultimate social and economic reaction. In what later became known as the Cornerstone Speech, Confederate Vice President Alexander H. Stephens declared that the cornerstone of the new government rested upon the great truth that the Negro is not equal to the white man. The slavery subordination to the superior race is its natural normal condition. This is our new government. It's the first in the history of the world based upon the great physical and philosophical and moral truth. After the war, Stephens tried to qualify his remarks, claiming they were extemporaneous, metaphorical, and intended to refer to public sentiment rather than the principles of the new government on this subject. Four of the seceding states, the Deep South, states of South Carolina, Mississippi, Georgia, and Texas, issued formal declarations of the causes of their decision, each of which identified the threat to slaveholders' rights as the cause of or a major cause of secession. Georgia also claimed a general federal policy of favoring Northern over Southern economic interests. Texas mentioned slavery 21 times, but also listed the failure of the federal government to live up to this obligation. In the original annexation agreement to protect settlers along the exposed western frontier, Texas resolutions further stated that governments of the state and the nation were established exclusively by the white race for themselves and their posterity. They also stated that although equal civil and political rights applied to all white men, they did not apply to those of the African race. Further, opening that the end of racial enslavement would bring inevitable calamities upon both races and desolation upon the 15 slaveholding states. Alabama did not provide a separate declaration of causes. Instead, the Alabama Ordinance stated the election of Abraham Lincoln by a secessional party of vow hostile to the domestic institutions and to the peace and security of the people of the state of Alabama, preceded by many and dangerous infractions of the Constitution of the United States by many of the states and people of the northern section is a political wrong so insulting and menacing as a character to justify the people of the state of Alabama in the adoption of prompt and decided measures for their future peace and security. The ordinance invited the slaveholding states of the South, who may approve such purpose in order to frame a provisional as well as a permanent government among the principles of the Constitution of the United States, to participate in a February 4, 1961 convention in Alabama, in Montgomery, Alabama. The secession ordinances of the remaining two states, Florida and Louisiana, simply declared their sovereign ties with the federal union without stating any causes. Afterwards, the Federal Secession Convention formed a committee to draft the Declaration of Congress, but the committee was charged before completion of the task. Only an undated, untitled draft remained. Four of the upper South states, Virginia, Arkansas, Tennessee, and North Carolina, rejected secession until after the clash at Fort Sumner. Virginia ordinance stated a kinship with the slaveholding states of the lower South, but did not name the institution itself as primary reason for its course. Arkansas secession ordinance encompassed a strong objection to the use of military force to preserve the Union as its motivating reason. Prior to the outbreak of war, the Arkansas Convention had on March 20th given as their first resolution the people of the northern states have organized a political party, purely sectional in its character, the central and controlling idea of which is hostility to the institution of African slavery. As it exists in the southern states, and the party has elected a president pledged to administer the government upon principles inconsistent with the rights and subversive of the interests of the southern states. North Carolina and Tennessee limited their ordinances to simple withdrawing, although Tennessee went so far as to make clear they wished to make no comment at all on the abstract doctrine of secession. In a message to the Confederate Congress on April 29, 1861, Jefferson Davis cited both the tariff and slavery for some secession. Secessionists and conventions, the pro-slavery fire eaters group of the Southern Democrats, called for immediate secession, were opposed by two factions. Cooperativeness in the Deep South would delay secession until several states left the Union, perhaps in a Southern Convention. Under the influence of men such as Texas Governor Sam Houston, delay would have the effect of sustaining the Union. Unionists, especially in the border South, often formed Whigs, appealed to sentimental attachment to the United States. Southern Unionists, favorite presidential candidate was John Bell of Tennessee, sometimes running under an opposition party banner. Many secessionists were actively politically. Governor William Henry Gist of South Carolina corresponded secretly with other Deep South governors, and most Southern governors exchanged clandestine commissioners. Charleston Secessionists 1860 Association published over 200,000 pamphlets to persuade the youth of the South. The most influential was The Doom of Slavery and the South Alone Should Govern the South, both by John Townsend of South Carolina and James D.B. DeBose, The Interest of Slavery of the Southern Non-Slaveholder. Developments in South Carolina started a chain of events. The foreman of a jury refused the legitimacy of federal courts, so federal judge Andrew Magrath rule the U.S. judicial authority in South Carolina was vacated. A mass meeting in Charleston celebrating the Charleston and Savannah Railroad State Corporation led to the South Carolina legislature to call for a secession convention. U.S. Senator James Chestnut Jr. resigned, as did Senator James Henry Hammond. Elections for secessionists were heated to an almost raving pitch. No one dared dissent. According to historian William W. Freeland, even one respected voice included the Chief Justice of South Carolina, John Belton O'Neill, lost election to the secession convention on a cooperativist ticket. Across the South, mobs expelled Yankees, and in Texas, executed German Americans suspected of loyalty to the United States. Generally, seceding conventions will follow, did not call for a referendum to ratify, although Texas, Arkansas, and Tennessee did, as well as Virginia's second convention. Kentucky declared neutrality, while Missouri had its own civil war until the Unionists took power and drove the Confederate legislators out of the state. Attempts to thwart the secession. In the antebellum months, the Corcoran Amendments was a successful attempt by the Congress to bring the seceding states back to the Union and to convince the border slave states to remain. It was a proposed amendment to the United States Constitution by Ohio Congressman Thomas Corcoran that would share domestic institutions of the states, which in 1861 included slavery. From the Constitution amendment process and from abolition or interference by Congress. It was passed by the 36th Congress on March 2, 1861. The House approved it by a vote of 133-65. The United States Senate adopted it with no changes on a vote of 24-12. It was then submitted to the state legislatures for the ratification. In his inaugural address, Lincoln endorsed the proposed amendment. The text as follows. No amendment should be made to the Constitution which will authorize or give to the Congress power to abolish or interfere with any state. The domestic institutions thereof, including that of persons held to labor, are serviced by the laws of said state. Had it been ratified out of the required number of states prior to 1865, it would have been institutionalized, slavery immune to the constitutional amendment procedures and to the interference by Congress. Okay. I'm looking at how much more I have to read, because I do want to know what you all would like to talk about. So we'll continue to talk about the history of the Confederate States of America on next Monday. On Wednesday, author, self-publisher Sean Alexander Hamilton is returning on Wednesday at 5:30 a.m. Central Standard Time. He's in L.A., so on L.A. time, it'll be 3:30. Wait. Right? Yeah. And on Friday, we will continue talking about America's truth being revealed and talking more about Mississippi truth being revealed, but talking about America's truth being revealed. America's truth revealed. So the first time we talked about that, it was a very interesting program, and then we missed the following two. So we're continuing on this Friday, and on next Monday we'll continue talking about Confederate States of America, and it's like money making, motivating Monday always. So we'll talk about more about the job market and jobs and entrepreneurship and what's happening with corporations and mom and pop businesses and SBA. Because SBA, there's a deadline coming up for the PPP program, and I still need to get through regarding my I think my loans are processing, but then the advanced EIDL, I have been my calls have been getting through, but I've been having trouble with that final interview call to verify my that my information is accurate before getting advanced money. So but the PPP, I believe the deadline is tomorrow. And then for homeowners and renters insurance and PPP and other SBA loans can continue on. Oh, my goodness. It's almost time to conclude. It is time to conclude getting called. So you all definitely call on Wednesday when author and self-publisher Sean Alexander Hamilton returns to talk about his life as an author and self-publisher in his three books, which you all can find at Amazon. And on Friday, we'll continue talking about America's truth revealed. And a little bit before the show, at the beginning of the show on Wednesday, we'll talk about hot topics, like what's going on in sports and in politics. There's been some amazing news. Cam Newton has signed a one-year deal with the Patriots. So congrats to him, and there's been like NBA news, and more NFL news, and just overall sports news that we need to talk about and everything. So that's pretty cool, and of course community news and legitimate nonprofit organizations and those that are just out there making a difference as individuals and proactive community activists and advocates to talk about. But we'll continue where we are stopping in regards to Wikipedia.org, Confederate States of America. We'll continue talking about the history. I've learned some interesting things myself just from sharing this information, but you know, some people could care less about history, but they care what's going on right now. Maybe they care what's going on with humanity. They know what's right and what's wrong, and that wrongs need to be right, made right, and what's right need to continue being right. So there's nothing wrong if you're not a history buff, but it's good for us to know facts and good to know that history lessons and books need to be rewritten and more inclusive also, because many of us do be scratching our head like, wait a second, something's missing, you know, so what's really going on, you know? So, you know, my family and teachers and friends, and I've always been like proactive too, to teach myself on various subjects also. And we're always still learning, right? Because no one's a Mr. or Miss Know-It-All either. I'm definitely not saying I'm always, like sometimes people will make a comment like if something posted. Oh, that you've just been, like, all of us are ignorant on something. Many of us are experts, well-versed on certain topics, and many of us are ignorant. And so for those of you that are experts in certain subjects, it's important for you to educate us instead of just saying, oh, you're ignorant. You don't know what that means. You know, maybe not. But it's important for us to remove the ignorance and learn the facts, you know. It's important for us to share opinions, but learn the facts and learn the history about certain subjects. You know, so sometimes people need to be mindful before they call the people ignorant, because, yeah, true, some people might be ignorant on certain subjects. Everybody's not Mr. or Miss Know-It-All, you know, and everybody's not favorite subjects on certain things. You know, people have favorite subjects. Some people have, when you're in school, you have your favorite subjects and you have your least favorite subjects. And that continues on in life. So instead of just, because somebody might not know something on a subject that you're well-versed on, instead of just trying to argue them down and belittle them, take time out to educate or recommend where they can learn facts more. I'm just saying, that's pretty much what I'm saying. But remember, email me at clustershock, KULTREFHOKENT_Beth@yahoo.com. Again, let me repeat, KULTREFHOKENT_Beth@yahoo.com. And I appreciate you reaching out throughout social media, Facebook, YouTube, Vimeo, LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram. On Instagram, I'm Beth Entrepreneur. Also, Terry and I are being Beth.TerryLive, just like on Facebook, we have Beth Terry page. Then we, the James Franco Project Group have an IG. Need to interact more. We probably do a live soon in the group and on Instagram soon. The group is expanding. We're almost at 2K members. It's a private group, so that's amazing that we're really growing and really effectively network. It's an amazing support group of those that support James Franco and also share our own life and talents of what projects that we're working on. So a big shout out to the Oscar Film Festival. Big shout out to the Crossroads Film Festival, which will be in the fall this year. I wasn't hands on last year, but those of you that like to screen films, 3 more weeks to screen films. Those of you that would like to be a part of selecting what films will actually make it into the Crossroads Film Festival. So I'll be sharing that info too on my social media for you all. Let's see. But again, email CultureShock, KULTREFHOKENT_Beth@yahoo.com. Send your media kits if you would like to be a guest co-host or want to talk about a certain subject. Awesome music, please send MP3. Wave, WMA, send your music in that form. And thank you for those of you that do. Oh, and I have, I haven't done the rooms, in the Facebook rooms. So I have a lunch date. I've been sending invites and saying hi to people. So I'm hoping we get it right, because I haven't done the rooms yet. My nephew, I know, sent me an invite once, and someone else sent me an invite like a month ago. I had seen the commercials from Facebook regarding the rooms, which is supposed to be like Facebook versions of Zoom, right? I love Zoom. I attend a lot of Zoom meetings. I haven't hosted a Zoom meeting, but I attend a lot of Zoom meetings with No Labels. And Inc. hosts great Zoom meetings, and even our neighborhood association is going to start having Zoom meetings, virtual meetings, not just in our group, Facebook group, but throughout Zoom, since we had to do everything virtual until it's safe out there. Mississippi's been experiencing high numbers since this all started. And today, our mayor, Meryl Lumumba, mentioned that tomorrow you would get a citation if you are not seen wearing a facial covering on your face starting tomorrow. And, you know, our governor, the state governor, Tate Reeves, he's been saying that, that it's a possibility that some people will get citations for not social distancing and not having facial coverings on. But thank you all for tuning in. I'm trying to get to the studio right quick before concluding the program. And I'm getting in there. Yep. So also looking forward to former guests. You know, do you ever wonder where is that guest that was on the show back in 2013 or 2014 or 2011? I wonder where that group, Dread Days or somebody, what they're doing now. So many of former guests are looking forward to coming back, and then also there will be new faces coming. So super excited to have a former guest come back and give us an update of what's been going on in their lives. Denise Lewis is returning. You remember the opera singer? She's coming, and she has a lot of professional and personal news to share. There's just some amazing people that you're familiar with and also new ones. And thank policing expert Juan Coy for coming on, sharing so much with us recently, and Sean Alexander, and for the first-time listeners and the long-time listeners, thank you so much for your amazing support. So I will be concluding the program real soon. Not yet, but real soon. I'll play a PSA right now.
I need a tax preparer. How should I choose one?
Using a paid tax preparer this year? Before paying someone to do your taxes, make sure they're qualified. Ask about their fees, experience, and training. Check with the Better Business Bureau. Avoid anyone who promises a higher refund. And review your tax return before you sign it. And make sure your preparer signs it too. For more tips, visit irs.gov and search Choosing a Preparer.
So the deadline, speaking of taxes, I'm still waiting like many of you are. And now they're talking about a second round of stimulus checks, right? The deadline is July 15th, right? Just reminding everyone that, the new deadline was like July 15th. Because the state of Mississippi had a deadline like May the 15th. Then the state of Mississippi went ahead and joined with the federal deadline of July 15th. But I'm still waiting. I've been waiting forever. But there's people that filed way before I did that still waiting also. But oh my goodness! But thank you all for tuning in. It's been an amazing commentary type show. Anybody that called in, my apologies. Please call in on Wednesday to talk with author and self publisher Sean Alexander Hamilton and I, and definitely on Friday regarding America's Truth Reveal. Then next Monday we'll continue to talk, regarding the Confederate States of America and other amazing Make Money, Motivate Monday news also. And I thank you. Thank you so much for your love and your support. Big shout out to the top five that always tune in. Of course, my native U.S., Canada, U.K., China, and Morocco, and every village, every town, big city, little island, big island. If you're in the cold or if you're in dealing with hot weather or stormy weather, thank you for your support. Let's continue to pray for world peace. So there's some things that's going on that many of us don't even know about. So we thank you to those of you that do try to tell us and let us know what's going on in your areas, good, bad, and in between. Because one thing about the power of the internet and social media, it brings us all closer to each other, and we should deal with it in an effectively positive manner, so we can defeat all this hatred and defeat the devil and all of this craziness. Because God, love wins all the time, right? And prayer works. And I thank you for your love and your good vibes and your prayers as I send you out love and good vibes also. And thank you again for supporting the show and interacting with me online, and those that interact with me in person also. Do not think that I am never, ever grateful, because I am. And it's how mama raised us. You know, be grateful, be thankful, you know. But thank you all so much. Again, email at kultreshoknt_best@yahoo.com. Big shout out to my man, my guy, my future hubby, Terry. Terry's listening. I thought he was going to call. He might be calling in, because I didn't see the screen. Because I wanted to share. I did not know I was going to go there, but I'm glad I did. Because some things we need to know in regards to what's going on with the symbolism of things, flags and monuments and statues and all of that. Some of us need to know. Some of us don't even know, don't care. But again, sometimes it don't matter, because we need to focus on the moment right now, what's happening, so we can make a peaceful now and a peaceful future. So thank you. I still have a Prince question of you queued up, so I'm going to conclude with a question of you. And when you hear us on Wednesday, it'll be a different song. And remember, send the awesome music so I can add to the playlist. Thank you, and God bless. Remember, God is love, and love is God. Yeah.